Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom.
Dave, great to be back with you.
Well, Tom, thank you. Obviously, there's been a big change here at WAMC and on the Capital Connection since you last spoke with our Alan Chartok. He is retired, and you know, you've been appearing on this program for a long time. I mean,
oh yeah, my time, especially as controller, though. Alan was always so kind in inviting me on, and the discussions, as you well know, because you were right there, were always very thought-provoking and really got into the nitty-gritty of what we do in the controls office, what's happening in New York, certainly with a good political discussion as well. Now, that being said, David, Alan did have that tendency to throw a fastball at me every now and then, and sometimes I had to cringe a little bit, but he knew how to draw good conversation out of all of his guests, and I was just very honored that he always invited me back. And you know what he did to create the WAMC that we know and love today. I mean, monumental accomplishment. I don't know anybody else that could have done what he had done, and I just think it's wonderful that you've now picked up the reins, because you were his sidekick. And you know, many of the listeners may not realize, but when I'd be in the studio, you'd be there right next to Alan, keeping us all on track. So I can't think of anybody better prepared to keep the conversation going, to keep the focus on what's happening in the Capitol. So good luck to you on your voyage now, filling in those big shoes of Alan Chartok. But he's left all of us, guests and questioners, a great legacy to build on.
Tom, thank you so much for those kind words. And I want to say, you are the kind of guest that a show like this really appreciates. You know, Alan cuts to the chase, as you said. He even got involved when your pre-audit powers were taken away by then-Governor Andrew Cuomo, and stuck up for you, you know, and peppered the governor about it when he talked to the governor. And yet, you keep coming on the show. And what we want on this program, and I talked with Assembly Minority Leader William Barkley about this last week, is a program where all parties, all people who are involved with state government can come and talk to our listeners about what they do, about how state government functions, how it functions well, how it doesn't function well, and get to those hard questions as well during that time. But to be a place where everyone is welcome and we can have a reasonable discussion, unlike a lot of the divisiveness that's in our politics today.
Well, I think it's so important as well, because you certainly look at the print side of journalism. So many of the news outlets, they no longer cover the state capitol. They don't have the staff anymore. They don't put the priority on it. And, you know, so I really wonder sometime, how do people get information about what's going on at the state level? And, you know, very often the decisions made, not just in Albany, but in state capitals across the country, are as impactful, if not more so, than what happens in Washington. And so the fact that you're going to continue and really build on this focus on what's happening in state government, I think is so very important, because there really is a gap out there in terms of knowledge and information. So thank you for keeping it going. And I know it's going to be a great and very effective way of, you know, hey, in the Capital Region especially, folks care about what's going on, you know, down the road in Albany and in the state capitol. So again, thank you, David, for having me on and all these other guests and really taking the show to the next level.
Well, let's get right to it. I mean, you cover the state's financial situation, the state and New York City, of course, and I keep hearing Republicans talking about huge deficits coming to the tune of $9 or $10 billion. Of course, budget has been passed. You have the end of session and more talks going on in the assembly this week. What's your assessment so far of our financial situation? We'll start with the state of New York.
Well, I mean, to put it simply, okay for now, but very problematic as we move forward. The state financial plan came up, which is, you know, the update of the multi-year perspective on where we're headed. And it's anticipating a drop in revenue over the plan of like $5 billion a year. So we're already starting to see, you know, in terms of the cash report we put out, the expected reduction in revenue in terms of tax collections year over year. But it'd be fair to say that they really were more significant than when the budget was first adopted. So the financial plan updates the projections and the estimates. So right now we're kind of in line with the projections, but those projections were lowered because the state saw that the revenue was coming in much less than anticipated. So you're absolutely right in quoting the number. Now we're talking about out-year budget gaps, you know, for next year over $9 billion, the year after that close to $14 billion, another $13 billion the year after that. So those gaps have grown significantly. Now, again, when you talk about out-year gaps, a lot can happen between now and then, but there's no doubt we have a combination of factors happening that are impacting revenues in a more negative way than we had first thought. So what does that mean? It means in the short run, we have to be very careful about monitoring the revenues coming in, the tax collections, and the spending, certainly in the short term, long term as well. But also recognize that one of the good things that happened in this budget and built on what happened last year's budget as well, the state has been much more aggressive in building up our rainy day reserve funds. And I give credit to the governor and the legislature for doing this. So we are really at an historic high in terms of money that is set aside for economic uncertainty. So while it is certainly a concern as to where we're at right now, we're better prepared to weather if, in fact, the worst of these anticipated gaps, you know, were to come. But I worry more for next year's budget. Some of the spending commitments that were made that were expected to be of a recurring nature, it may be harder for us to meet those spending expectations. You could be back to a serious discussion either about curtailing certain services or raising more revenue, meaning taxes, or what often happens too often in New York is that when you don't want to cut services or raise taxes, you borrow more. We already have a very high debt burden. So, you know, compared to where we were a year ago, it's a much more problematic picture with regard to the state budget as we look forward.
What triggers the rainy day fund? Is there some threshold that would make lawmakers reach into it? How does that process work, Tom?
Well, I mean, there are different, you know, we kind of use broadly the term, you know, rainy day reserve funds, but there are statutory reserve funds which require an act of the legislature, and then there are the informal reserves where it really is money that doesn't require any formal triggering to release the money. And that really gives the executive, the governor, the kind of cushion that that really gives maximal flexibility. You know, my perspective, frankly, as controller has been we should be doing more to build up the statutory reserves, the more formal ones, because those are more protected, because the informal ones could be used not for real emergencies, but just because, you know, there's a desire to you know, to enhance certain spending. So there's a broad category of reserves, though, which have been significantly built up. You know, something we talked about on past shows with Alan, New York really has been behind other states in terms of the percent that we have put aside for rainy day reserve funds. So this has been a very positive change that does enable us, you know, to weather what could be a very challenging couple of years to come. So our reserves now, when you total them all up at the end of the fiscal year, it's going to be a little over $19 billion. So that's a pretty healthy combination of reserves that we may have to draw upon.
Yeah, and it looks like you're fairly close to that in the out years, right?
Yeah, but again, I mean, out years are out years, right? So there's a long way to see what, you know, what actually is going to happen. Yeah, I think one of the challenges is that many of the economists, and certainly in terms of expectations, even with the state's planning, is that we were going to be seeing a recession this year, hopefully a short and shallow one, as the phrase is. Well, you know, again, economic terms and definitions sometimes are a bit fluid, but I think it's fair to say everybody, you know, the economists keep projecting the recession. It hasn't happened yet. Now, does that mean it's not going to happen? You know, hard to say. And certainly because coming out of the COVID close down and the economic damage, a lot of the traditional ways of analyzing and evaluating the economy have kind of been thrown out the window. So, you know, you still have persistent inflation, not down to where it needs to be. Interest rates, you know, at higher levels than it's been for many, many years. People starting to be more conservative on spending. So we see that in terms of an impact on sales tax collections, the growth slowing there. Statewide and in many of our counties outside of New York City, you know, year over year negative. Yet we see unemployment continuing to be pretty low and going down. You know, we've grown back about 93-94% of the jobs that were lost. So still seem to be hiring going on. So all these conflicting data points, it makes it hard to project in terms of where the economy is headed. And that's important when we're doing budget assumptions, because how the economy goes impacts on revenue, on tax collections. And one of the big issues that we have to look at is personal income tax. That's a category that certainly has been downward beyond what was projected. I think everybody understood that we would be collecting less than last year, but it's been coming in lower than I think any of us had anticipated. Okay. And increasingly, well, you know, part of it is Wall Street, right? Okay. Wall Street had some banner years coming out of COVID, and obviously not so much last year. So in terms of capital gains and impact, you know, the year after, what we saw in this year's tax collections, certainly that was an impact. Some would argue that people moving out of the state, you know, we know we have a net loss of population. And generally, it's folks at the higher end. We also, you know, have to temper it, because some folks are moving back and, you know, more folks are becoming millionaires. You know, the problem is, you know, you lose a few billionaires, it does have an impact. So I think we need to also be more careful about monitoring what exactly is that issue of taxpayer migration. I personally don't think it's as severe as some of the critics say, but we can't be unmindful of it. You know, some of the folks that say, well, you know, we could afford to lose, you know, some of those folks. Well, you know, at the end of the day, because we are a state most reliant on personal income tax revenue as our primary source of revenue, we want people to continue to be here and pay taxes. We want Wall Street to be profitable and successful, to pay taxes. You know, Wall Street alone accounted for, in the recent numbers, you know, over 20% of the total revenue coming to the state. So it is a problem for us when Wall Street is impacted. But, you know, the markets seem to be bouncing back. So, you know, I'm still, you know, hopeful that we'll see, rather than a downturn, but, you know, kind of the sluggishness we're seeing now, hopefully we'll see a little bit of a bounce back. But we need to look at it carefully. It could be that if that recession does kick in, the numbers will become even more concerning than they are right now.
Am I hearing, if I'm correct, State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, who's joining us this week on the Capital Connection, am I hearing you somewhat agree with the Republicans over the issue of out-migration and that we need to be careful of not letting too many folks leave the state? And if so, is that because they say the taxes are too high?
Well, you know, I think some of my friends on the other side of the aisle over-dramatize the point. But there is a valid point in there. There is a kernel of truth. I think people that leave for different reasons, taxes perhaps being one of them. But quality of life is an important issue. You know, certainly when you look from a downstate perspective, the city has had its struggles and challenges. You know, some of the folks, higher income folks, as we know, during COVID, left the city, but they didn't necessarily leave the state, right? So they ended up going to Long Island, Hudson Valley, whatever. So, you know, the city, which is a very important economic engine for the state, has had similar struggles, you know, in terms of their out-year budget gaps are growing in significance. Now, the city, you know, like the state has benefited from the bounce back. Their revenue has still been coming in on track, but the city also was facing some tough issues as far as out year costs. You know, the city has had some big labor agreements. You know, the good news there is that at least they know what the numbers are, but you know, there are some costs attached to that. One of the big issues, more so for the city than the state, to an extent the state also, is this unanticipated cost, which is going to be in the billions of dollars to deal with the migrant asylum seeker issue.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that with you.
Yeah, I mean, that hadn't been planned for. And now, you know, now we're having to deal with it and spend money to deal with it. So, you know, so besides the economic trends, you've got these, you know, unanticipated expenditures that puts added pressure.
Well, so let's flip this. You know, we just started about out-migration. Now you've got in-migration with asylum seekers, right? And there's this question, well, what do we do with these folks? The mayor, Adams of New York, was sending groups upstate. You had fights among different municipalities and counties, states of emergency, and all sorts of things going on. Some welcoming them, of course. But then there's the question of, can these asylum seekers be put to work? Can we get them work visas where they could contribute to the financial health of the state of New York?
And I suspect many of them would very much want to, right? The, you know, the New York being...
I think we're hearing some are trying already.
Yeah. Well, you get into the bureaucracy of work rules and what you need to be able to work. And, you know, obviously much of this has to do with the federal system, which everybody seems to acknowledge is totally out of whack and outdated, but this nobody seems to be able to come up with a consensus to work it out. So, and we certainly know that there are many jobs out there that have gone unfilled. Now, it is a tight labor market, but I could tell you, you know, for our agency, we're having a challenge in hiring people in the capital region. So, you know, there are jobs. I hate to say it this way, but in reality, there are jobs, particularly in hospitality. Perhaps some may call them lower wage jobs, but you know, often you go to a restaurant and they're limited in how many people they could serve because they don't have enough help. But, you know, you hear that all the time, or their hours are short. So there are jobs to be had, and you know, I think many of these asylum seekers are here because they want to be part of the American scene, the American economy, and we should figure out how we're going to make that possible. Again, much of this involves federal issues, you know, beyond what the state can control, but you know, I know we're heading into political season, you know, with the presidential races. They've got to be focused on this. And in the short run, I don't think it's unreasonable, as the mayor has called for in New York City and the governor as well, to say, hey, to the feds, this is largely a federal problem that's being transferred to the states and localities. You've got to help us with the resources to deal with these costs. And, you know, we've gotten some help from our congressional delegation, credit to Chuck Schumer and his colleagues in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, in the Biden administration, but it certainly hasn't been completely covering the additional costs that are there. So we need the federal government to step up with a more intelligent process in terms of having these people be placed in employment and more money to help defer the costs for housing these people in the short run.
Well, and there's a whole other issue here that's involved and should be anticipated, right? And that's climate change. Think about it, Tom. The idea that there are going to be more hospitable places in our country where climate change isn't having the kind of destructive impact, perhaps even the Northeast. So you could see more people because of not only the asylum seekers and folks from outside our country trying to get here, but folks even within our country migrating to areas as the climate worsens to more habitable places, as I'm reading, like the Northeast.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's, you know, some of that's going to be hard to gauge in the short run, but when you think about New York State, and especially if it becomes a bit more temperate, the growing season will be longer, so that there's a positive there. Certainly, New York has plentiful water and clean water. You know, when you look at the states that have been suffering droughts and you know, contamination, you know, relatively speaking, New York is better positioned in that regard.
So, not many earthquakes.
Right. I mean, we tend not to have this. We have other kinds of challenges, but we tend not to have the same level of natural disasters. But, you know, that being said, obviously, you know, the impact of climate change also has a negative, right? The storms that we've seen, particularly for coastal areas. But this is another interesting piece of the migration issue, which I don't think is talked about a lot. And I did have the opportunity a couple of years ago to be part of a delegation that included Stuart Applebaum from the union RWDSU retail workers and Monsignor Kevin Sullivan from Catholic Charities in New York to visit Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And one of the issues that we saw when we went to some of the agricultural areas is how climate change was affecting the traditional way of farming in that region, making it harder for the farmers to earn a living, and that was part of what was contributing to the migrant crisis as well. I had never thought of that. So there are ways that climate change is impacting, as you say. Maybe there may actually be some positive in terms of impact on New York, but boy, we've got to get a better handle on climate change. That's a whole other discussion, David. But even if there's some short-term benefit, clearly that's an issue that we need to do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And New York, striving very hard to be a leader in this regard. And as you know, with our pension fund, we've been trying to be a leader in de-risking the portfolio related to climate. Even if there may be a silver lining here and there, I think long run, yeah, that is a challenge we need to address more effectively than we have.
Even if it meant borrowing money. I mean, you supported the Bond Act, the Environmental Bond Act, which, of course, is looking to try to mitigate this issue.
Yes. The part of the purpose of the Bond Act, a very key part of it, was to have the resources to meet the very ambitious climate goals that we have here in New York State. And what I liked about the Bond Act is it was the kind of borrowing that we argue for, which is voter-approved debt. You know, one of the big issues and why the state is so much in debt beyond where it should be is that most of our debt is through what we call the backdoor borrowing, through public authorities, which really has limited accountability. You don't really do an effective accounting for all of it because it's done through different public authorities. And the way the state constitution was set up, it understood that government needed to borrow to do its business, but it anticipated that the ultimate check on making sure we weren't going too far in any one direction was the power of the ballot box, was voters. And right now you're only talking about 4 or 5% of the outstanding debt is voter-approved general obligation debt or borrowing, and that is the wrong direction. So, we have a very comprehensive proposal for debt reform. I think it's the third iteration of what we proposed. Debt reform tends not to be the biggest issue that captivates the hearts and minds of people in the state capitol, but especially if we have an economic downturn in revenue, the fact that we have so much indebtedness in the state is a disadvantage for us, because if you're paying a lot for old debt, you don't have as much capacity to borrow for your current needs. So, this combination of the economic challenge with the uncertain economy, the federal stimulus money coming out of COVID being spent down, the economy slowing, people being a little less certain about spending, there is the potential recipe for a very challenging economic climate coming up.
All right, Tom, we're really running out of time fast. Just under 4 minutes. I want to go a little rapid fire for a second here. You'll remember that segment of the program, Alan, used to rattle off quick questions for you.
Oh, here's where I know we get nervous.
Here we
All
go.
Right.
Well, we've been hearing about this casino deal out in Rochester, where the Seneca Nation has apparently agreed with the state to build a casino. But according to news reports I've been reading, the Rochester delegation was apparently blindsided by the move. It's not happy. Was there any oversight on something like this? Do you have any insight for us?
Well, certainly the controls office has not been involved. This is another area where we've been left out. As you know, Senator Barilla put in a legislation to bring us in. I don't anticipate that's going to pass. But, this tends to be the prerogative of the executive, especially when you're talking about dealing with the Indian Nation. So, doesn't sound like the assembly is going to be moving on this because of the concerns of the delegation. But
right.
Suffice it to say, this I'm sure we haven't heard the last of this this week. We'll see whether this gets back on track or not, whether it deserves to get back on track. We've not been involved in it, so I can't give you my own personal insight as to whether the deal is good or not. I don't think too many people know the details of the deal anyway. So anytime you talk about gaming and expanding it, there's always very different opinions as to what is the right thing to do.
Well, I would think a financial person should always be involved, especially if it's the state comptroller. That's my two cents. All right.
Well, but you've been channeling your inner Senator Barilla.
Or my inner Alan Shartok. Well, there is a huge issue on the table in New York State, and it hasn't been resolved and probably won't be resolved anytime soon, and that's housing. We were just talking about asylum seekers who, of course, have been putting in motels and other places, but in general, housing, rent, issues in the city and upstate. But you have done a report on housing costs. And what I was struck by was a statement on your website. New York has the lowest home ownership rates in the nation.
Yeah, only about 53-54% owning a home. Those are 2022 figures. The national numbers are more like 66%. And obviously, you know, much of that has to do with the cost issue. You know, some of it, I think, is also driven by the fact that New York City, obviously, you have a lot of folks that, you know, rental is
sure.
the preferred way. But the percentage of income that people are paying for housing, whether it's rental or for home ownership, for a mortgage, you have more and more people that are above that 30% of their income being spent on housing, which is considered to be a burden. And increasingly across the state, numbers like more like 50%. So, you know, this is an issue that has to be dealt with. Part of it is a supply issue. You know, the governor tried with her proposal to deal with it. We could argue whether that was rolled out the right way and whether it should have been more carrots rather than some sticks. But I think everybody has the view that one of the failures of this legislative session was the lack of activity on the housing front. It will probably be at the top of the list, if not the very top, certainly in the top three of issues when the legislature reconvenes next year.
I could go on and on and on. We just don't have any more time. We've been speaking with New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. So much on the table left, Tom. I'm sorry, including artificial intelligence. Hopefully I won't be replaced by a robot by the next show.
Never, never, never.
We really appreciate it every time you come and join us and talk to us about the financial situation in New
Great.
York State. And we very much look forward to your next visit.
We'll do it again. And David, thank you for keeping the Capital Connection going strong.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.